Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga.
Americans and Africans share a yearning to live in places where their rights are respected, their voices are heard, their governments answer to them and deliver for them. Working together, we can support democracy in our countries and around the world.
U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken calls on African leaders to provide better governance for their people amid threats from violent extremism and increasing corruption across the continent.
Some of us are educated, some of us have some skills, and if they get the opportunity to move from the camps and move to any other part of the Kenya, we are very hopeful that we can deliver very many things and we can also earn living.
Refugee rights groups welcome Kenya enacting a new law that gives the country's 500,000 refugees hope for access to education, work, and integration.
A lot is happening in Zimbabwe, in Southern Africa, that if issues do not see the light of print like this, we are heading towards another major catastrophe. The pandemic has thrown everything upside down, but also when things remain in dark, it becomes a huge problem.
A new research finds that the COVID-19 pandemic has hurt the financial viability of media outlets in Southern Africa, with the print media being the most hit. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Sudan, a political agreement has been signed, enabling Abdalla Hamdok to be reinstated as Prime Minister. Sudan's top general, Abdel Fattah al-Burhani, signed the deal on Sunday with Hamdok to restore the transition to civilian rule nearly a month after the military takeover. The agreement, signed on Sunday in Khartoum, also provides for the release of all political prisoners detained during the coup and stipulates that a 2019 constitutional declaration be a basis for a political transition. General Abdel Fattah al-Burhani appeared with Hamdok at a signing ceremony in the presidential palace, according to state television. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken is calling on African leaders to provide better governance for their people amid threats from violent extremism and increasing corruption across the continent. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken has received a warm reception at each stop on his first tour of Africa, including from Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. Blinken made clear that the Biden administration values Nigeria and the whole African continent as a major geopolitical player and a partner on the world stage. But he also waded into the sensitive issues such as reining in sometimes brutal security forces and respecting human rights. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
Americans and Africans share a yearning to live in places where their rights are respected, their voices are heard, their governments answer to them and deliver for them. Working together, we can support democracy in our countries and around the world.
Last month, Nigerian youths held memorial protests in Lagos and Abuja, 1 year after security forces violently suppressed mass protests against police brutality and bad governance. Blinken's focus on governments delivering for their citizens was warmly welcomed by Michelle Gavin, Senior Fellow for African Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations.
We need to start thinking bigger. When the U.S. government talks about governance, it's not just the modalities of elections, really, but governing capacity, service delivery, right? Government that actually works for people. And when it doesn't, that can sort of be reprimanded at the ballot box and move in a new direction.
In a major speech on Africa policy, Blinken addressed the real competition between America and China on the continent, but said that was not his focus. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
The United States doesn't want to limit your partnerships with other countries. We want to make your partnerships with us even stronger. We don't want to make you choose. We want to give you choices. Together, we can deliver real benefits to our people on the issues that matter most to them.
Blinken began the trip by reinforcing strong American ties with Kenya and joint efforts to reach a ceasefire to the fighting in Ethiopia. One expert argues that Africa should not be viewed simply through the prism of countering China's influence. Former U.S. Ambassador and former Assistant Secretary of State Johnny Carson spoke with VOA.
I think there is a fundamental difference between the policies being advanced by the Biden administration and the policies that were advanced by the last administration under Secretary Pompeo and former President Trump. The United States under the Biden administration values Africa as an important partner and on global issues ranging from climate change to human trafficking to strengthening our economic links. So it's an important relationship.
Blinken's last stop is Senegal, a predominantly Muslim democracy viewed by many as an island of stability in an increasingly insecure region. Cindy Sane, VOA News.
Defense ministers from Cameroon and Central African Republic say kidnapping for ransom, cattle theft, and illegal arms trafficking continue to hinder security along the border of the neighboring states. During this week's transborder security meeting in Baor, a commercial town in the Central African Republic, the defense ministers agreed to jointly deploy troops to protect civilians from rebels fighting to topple the government of the Central African Republic. Moki Edwin Kinzuka reports from Yaoundé.
Defense ministers and top military officials from Cameroon and the Central African Republic say they are preoccupied because rebels and armed groups are increasing transborder criminality and insecurity. Cameroon Defense Minister Joseph Betty Asomo says economic activity and development have been slowed by increasing insecurity on both sides of the border with CAR.
Nous avons la criminalité transfrontalière.
Asomo says rebels and armed groups from CAR regularly attack and seize goods, food, and cattle from civilians on both sides of the Cameroon CAR border. Asomo says civilians are regularly kidnapped for ransom. He says armed groups are illegally exploiting wood and minerals, especially gold, from border villages. Asomo said defense ministers and top military officials from Cameroon and CAR met this week in Boa, a commercial town in CAR. He said the transborder security meeting made a firm resolution to eradicate the growing insecurity. Asomo said rebels from CAR cross over to Cameroon when the rebels' hideouts are attacked by CAR government troops. UN peacekeeping troops of the Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission to CAR, MINUSCA, this week reported that rebels attacked UN troops protecting civilians near the Cameroon border. Ramal Claude Biro is CAR Minister of National Defense and Army Reconstruction. Biro says Cameroon and CAR agreed during the meeting to carry out joint military operations to stop insecurity and economic hardships on civilians caused by highway robbers and rebels fighting to topple the government of CAR. He says CAR and Cameroon want fleeing civilians to return to their plantations, cattle ranches, and markets in border towns and villages so economic activity can be revived. Speaking via the messaging app WhatsApp from the CAR capital Bangui, Biro said scores of people were kidnapped for ransom in the past 3 weeks. He said civilians should inform the military when strange people are seen in border villages. Cameroon and CAR military officials said several thousand arms and light weapons are illegally circulating on both sides of their border. The military officials vowed to intensify systematic border control. They said rebels may be disguising themselves as displaced persons and transporting weapons to attack civilians on both sides of the border. The defense officials said Presidents Paul Biya of Cameroon and Faustin Archange Touadéra of the Central African Republic want to return peace for the economic growth and development of their respective countries. CAR descended into violence in 2013 when the then president François Bozizé was ousted by the Seleka, a rebel coalition from the Muslim minority, which accused him of breaking peace deals. The violence forced more than 700,000 Central Africans to flee to neighboring Cameroon, Chad, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Nigeria. In 2019, CAR said peace was gradually returning to the troubled state. But in December 2020, renewed violence was sparked by the re-election of Touadéra as president. Cameroon shares a more than 900-kilometer boundary with the Central African Republic and hosts 310,000 refugees from the neighboring country. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Refugee rights groups have welcomed Kenya enacting a new law that gives the country's 500,000 refugees hope for access to education, work, and integration. But rights groups note the law comes just 6 months before Kenyan authorities plan to close the Dadaab and Kakuma refugee camps, which house more than 400,000 people, most who fled conflict in Somalia and South Sudan. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
This week, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta signed a new law that will give 500,000 refugees in the country an opportunity to earn a living instead of depending on the aid agencies that assisted them for 3 decades. Victor Odero is a policy and advocacy advisor at the International Rescue Committee. He says the law will help aid agencies to focus more on creating opportunities that can improve the lives of the refugees.
What stands out for me, and I suppose for humanitarian and also development and private sector actors, is that for the first time we see in legislation provisions that allow for refugees to become self-reliant, which is very important because you may know that over the last couple of decades, refugees have been wholly reliant on humanitarian assistance. I think this bill presents an opportunity for us to shift from this and to focus to enable and empower refugees to become self-reliant.
The refugee bill allows refugees to get education, jobs, and integrate into Kenyan society. Siad Tawane came to the Dadaab refugee camp as a toddler. He is a university graduate. The 34-year-old tells VOA the law can help him and the other professionals in the camp to work in other parts of the country to sustain their lives.
We are very much hopeful that refugees will get access to several opportunities such as work permit, because that has been one of the things we have been asking ourselves, is why the government of Kenya is not giving us a work permit to for the refugees to work elsewhere, not only in the camps. Some of us are educated, some of us have some skills, and if they get the opportunity to move from the camps and move to any other parts of the Kenya, we are very hopeful that we can deliver very many things and we can also earn living.
Kenya hosts one of the largest refugee populations in Africa. Most of the refugee lives in two big camps, Dadaab, which borders Somalia, and Kakuma, which borders South Sudan. The Kenyan government has said it will close the camps next year. The United Nations World Food Programme says it has not been able to provide a full food ration to refugees since 2018, and last month it was forced to cut rations another 20%. 27-year-old Aza Zibimana lives in the Kakuma refugee camp. She says getting employment and other opportunities can help her overcome the food shortage experience in the camps. Here in the camp, our needs are too much, she says. There are those who are jobless, and the food we are given in the camp is not enough for 2 months. And if you are jobless, life becomes hard for you. If they can get those opportunities to work for themselves, it can help so much. In September, the WFP said it needs $40 million to feed refugees in the Dadaab and Kakuma camps for 6 months. The aid agencies in Kenya have argued refugees can contribute a lot to Kenya's economy and social fabric if given opportunities instead of remaining in the camps. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
New research finds that the COVID-19 pandemic has hurt the financial viability of media outlets in Southern Africa, with the print media being the worst hit. Columbus Mavunga reports from Zimbabwe's capital, where the impact has been felt particularly hard.
Launching the report, researcher Reginald Rumini, a journalism professor at Rhodes University in South Africa, said the media in the region had been drastically affected by the COVID-19 pandemic.
This crisis, particularly the lockdowns and the restrictions on movement, it was force audiences online, all to consume broadcast news. Newspapers and magazines were particularly hard hit. And of course, with the decline in circulation, came a huge drop in revenue and retrenchment of staff, but a big restructuring of the newspaper industry across the region. A lot of papers were forced to go online, stop printing completely. Retrenchments were dramatic.
In Zimbabwe, Alpha Media, which publishes Newsday, the Zimbabwe Independent, and the Standard, stopped printing paper copies of its newspapers for months, moving all publications online. All of its staff received a 50% cut, while those not directly involved in e-paper production were put on leave. In South Africa, Associated Media Publishing stopped publishing its magazines, which included Cosmopolitan, House and Leisure, and Women on Wheels, while Caxton and CPT Publishers and Printers announced closure of their magazine division. South Africa's weekly Mail and Garden kept publishing, but said some advertisers had cancelled their campaigns. Rumini said without a dramatic turnaround or external assistance, such as donor funds, most media houses in Southern Africa will not get out of the hole that the coronavirus put them in. Johanna Gadzikwa is a media professor in South Africa. At the launch, she said the pandemic had caused a redefinition of the media industry in Southern Africa that could have a harmful effect on the region's societies.
The death or decline in circulation figures is quite worrisome. What do we think should be the way forward? Because news is something that we cannot not have in our societies. A lot is happening in Zimbabwe, in Southern Africa, that if issues do not see the light of print like this, we are heading towards another major catastrophe. The pandemic has thrown everything upside down, but also when things remain in dark, it becomes a huge problem.
The issue has extra renaissance in Zimbabwe, where advocates for the media say authorities have assaulted journalists in the line of duty. Nigel Nyamutumbu is the head of Media Alliance of Zimbabwe.
In terms of Zimbabwe, you find that they, on one hand, we have a problem of money, or we have a problem of resources. And we've also the problem of politics, political will, where you can speak of even the statutory instruments that were used to enforce the lockdown, where you also use the weaponization of the COVID-19 to actually clamp down in a calculated manner some civil liberties, including that of free expression and including that of media freedom, which by extension obviously affect media sustainability.
Nyamutungu says one cannot have a thriving media in an unconducive operating environment. And right now, even with COVID-19 slowly coming under control, Southern Africa is not a conducive environment for print journalism. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
A new report by the United Nations Children Fund says there are an estimated 240 million children around the world with disabilities. The UNICEF study compares data from 42 countries and covers more than 60 indicators of child well-being. They include nutrition and health, access to water and sanitation, education, and protection from violence and exploitation. Mavis Ochere in Jauso in the Ashanti region of Ghana has more on the story.
The new global estimate for the number of children with disabilities is higher than previous ones. UNICEF say it is based on a more meaningful and inclusive understanding of disabilities, which considers physical and social factors that can affect functioning as well as symptoms of anxiety and depression. Yetivette Mola is a disability inclusive specialist for UNICEF's Eastern and Southern Regional Office. She says the report should definitely influence how the various countries view and program initiatives for children with disabilities. She says over the years, the number of children with disabilities have heavily been underreported. Mola says 10.5% of children in Eastern and Southern Africa are disabled as compared to 15% in Central and Western Africa, the highest number of all regions captured by the report.
Children with disabilities are more disadvantaged than their peers without disabilities for a while. And so that has been a kind of a statement which we used to use, but now we have more concrete figures showing that children with disabilities have lower access on education. So different measures have been used in terms of nutrition, in terms of access to water and sanitation, hygiene, in terms of protection from violence, exploitation and abuse.
She says, according to the report, children with disabilities are 24% less likely to receive early stimulation during childhood, while 42% of such children were less likely to skills in reading and simple maths like addition and subtraction. She also says 51% of children with disabilities are likely to be unhappy, while 41% of them are likely to be discriminated against by their peers. Mula says it is critical for countries to use data from the report to plan for budgets for child protection programs and for inclusive education, including early childhood development for children with disabilities.
It's critically important that governments invest in inclusive quality education if they really want to break the cycle between poverty and disability. When children with disabilities are educated, they can afford to pay for their medical services. They can afford to pay for their housing.
She says governments must not only provide policies that will bring needed change, but also provide resources, leadership, and structures to improve the lives of children with disabilities. Mola says governments should also undertake various advocacy and capacity building programs to ensure that data from the report is used to allocate resources for programs that support these children. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Ochere in Jaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Netline Africa. And coming up in the second half of the program, sports, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection.
But first,
a Ghanaian entrepreneur is helping prepare students in rural areas for the modern economy by teaching them about robotics. His roaming classes have been so successful that Ghana's Minister of Education has adopted the lessons in schools. Victoria Amunga reports from Accra, Ghana.
Jonathan Kennedy's goal is to enable students from poor backgrounds like himself to access information technology. To help him do that, he founded InnovTech STEM Center. Hundreds of students have enrolled to learn about robotics in mobile classes Kennedy sets up, mostly in rural areas.
We are aiming at inspiring students anywhere they are, that their background, where they come from, do not matter when it comes to STEM. STEM is for everyone, and it doesn't matter whether you are rich or poor, it's for everyone. So the goal is to inspire and empower them.
STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math, key areas of knowledge for those seeking good, high-paying jobs. Yet fewer than 10% of Ghanaians have access to information technology equipment like computers, according to the country's statistical service. Kennedy's roaming classes are helping to bridge that gap and showing children that technology can be fun. 12-year-old Lorenda Ayiti is one of his students.
But at first, I thought the robot was meant for only guys. But now, I've learned a whole lot about robots, and I'll be very glad to teach others. Because at first, I thought robots was hard, it's difficult, and I cannot even think of doing anything about robots. But now, like, I'm perfect. I know more things about robots.
Kwasi Anoki, the Director of Information Technology and Communication in Ghana's Education Service, says robotics education has now been added to the country's new standard curriculum.
Robotics education opens the minds of the learners, makes them think and become problem solvers. So we start from the basic level upwards. Because of that, we have opened robotic labs in many of our schools where we are gradually taking them through the basics of robotics. So many institutions are also coming on board, NGOs are coming on board, collaborating with the science education unit to make sure that robotic education becomes part and parcel of our educational system.
A majority of the fastest growing occupations in Ghana and elsewhere require STEM skills and knowledge. Kennedy and Ghanaian authorities are hoping the strategy will equip youngsters for the modern economy of the 21st century. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
A Kenyan recycling company is improving sanitation for slum dwellers in Nairobi and turning the waste products into fertilizer for farmers. Brenda Mlinya has more from Nairobi.
Anita Mutinda walks to a small structure located inside the cluster of makeshift houses that she calls home in the heart of Mukuru Kwa Ruben, a poor neighborhood in Kenya's capital, Nairobi. The structure is one of the toilets installed by a company providing the much-needed service here. It is one of the reasons that Anita rented and has lived here for 5 years. She says life where she lived before was hard because she had to pay 5 shillings every time she needed to use a public toilet, and it was far from the house. Here, she doesn't have to pay a single cent to access this facility. Her landlady, Deborah Kerubo, says the availability of the toilet facility on her property has become a major selling point. She says tenants want a facility that has both day and night access. If they don't get that, they will keep moving, she says, until they get what they are looking for. Mukuru Kwa Ruben, like many other slum areas in Kenya's capital, is not connected to a sewage system. An estimated 60% of the population lives with this lack of sanitation. Elijah Gashoki, a clinical officer at a local community health center, says these conditions are a major cause of communicable diseases.
We start getting water wash diseases, conjunctivitis, and skin diseases. So there is a need for proper and safe and adequate provision of sanitation.
It is a gap that Synergy, a company providing sanitation solutions, says it is bridging. Synergy provides toilets that separate liquid and dry waste and help with waste management in the informal settlements. Sheila Kibudhu, Synergy's Kenya's external relations manager, says the company believes in not wasting any waste.
On a regular basis, we make sure that we provide a waste management service where all of the sanitation waste generated is then safely removed and transported to our organics recycling factory for processing, along with other forms of organic waste.
The toilet waste is collected daily and mixed with other organic waste from the community. It is then processed at Synergy's plant on the outskirts of Nairobi and turned into organic fertilizer and other agricultural inputs like high-protein feed for livestock.
One of the biggest challenges farmers are facing today is soil infertility. And so what the organic fertilizer does is that it helps restore the soil fertility, and that way farmers can improve their yields.
Synergy believes more and more farmers will be served as it keeps the cycle of turning waste into useful products going while providing a necessary service. Currently, the company has more than 5,000 toilets spread across 11 informal settlement areas in Nairobi, serving over 140,000 residents. Brenda Mulinya for VOA News, Nairobi.
And now in Northern Africa sports, South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns beat Hasaka's Ladies of Ghana 2-0 as they made history and won the first ever Women's Africa Champions League title in Cairo. Sundowns held on for the historic win despite playing the last few minutes with 10 women after Regina Magolola was shown a straight red card just moments after having come on as a substitute. It was something of a turnaround in fortunes for the two sides, with Sundowns having only scored twice en route to the final, whereas Hazakas had amassed 10 goals in their four previous games. On Thursday, ASF of Morocco clinched third place with a 3-1 win over Malabo Kings from Equatorial Guinea. In the World Cup qualifier, the South African Football Association SAFA president, Danny Jordan, has said there was a clear pattern of match manipulation during South Africa's 2022 World Cup qualifier against Ghana. Ghana beat Bafana Bafana 1-0 last Sunday in the crucial qualifier, a result which saw the Black Stars advance to Africa's playoffs for the tournament at the expense of the South Africans on goals scored. But SAFA lodged a complaint with FIFA about the match, and the world governing body in a letter dated November 17th said the protest will be submitted to a member of its disciplinary committee this week for consideration. South Africa's protests included allegations of match fixing, match manipulation, including corruption and bribery, which Jordan claimed may be linked to gambling at a press conference on Wednesday. The Ghana Football Association, which has dismissed any match-fixing allegation, has been asked for its observations on the matter. And in rugby, 2019 Rugby World Cup champions South Africa lost 27-26 to England at Twickenham. England had leapt out to a 17-6 lead midway through the first half and then held on until the decisive penalty in the 79th minute. England's win avenged their loss to South Africa in 2019 in Yokohama, and the two rugby giants might again tussle it out in France in 2023. And that's it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports.
Now let's take a closer look at Africa, one man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Take it away, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. The South African National Congress, ANC, the party that led the fight against apartheid South Africa and widely seen as the party of Mandela is at the present time wobbling. The ANC and the allied parties became the governing party in 1994 at the end of apartheid. That was a great promise to many of those who fought for a non-racial South Africa. However, at the present time, things are not looking so good. Some analysts had predicted that ANC, over a period of time, may begin to demonstrate it could no longer be a governing party. Such analyses were seen as far-fetched because few could envisage a situation where another party or the opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, could emerge as a governing party in a non-apartheid South Africa. But in the last local elections, this ANC performed badly. For the first time, it polled less than 50%, and it lost a number of provincial capitals, including major commercial capital like Johannesburg. In the past, the ANC leadership has felt it could form coalition with small parties to continue to govern major cities. Although in the last local election, the Democratic Alliance, the major, mainly white party, was also showing great vigor. What is now a big surprise to the ANC is that it could not find suitable partners for coalition so it could govern some of the main cities of South Africa. Those who were willing to discuss with the ANC made clear that they could only join the ANC if the ANC agrees to some of its own major program. For example, the breakaway faction of the ANC of Julius Malema of the Economic Freedom Fighter, who was expelled from the ANC, said that it could not agree to a coalition unless the ANC agrees to some of its main programs, which may cause problems for the ANC. Now, many people have said that the reason why the ANC is losing support among the South African people may be due to three things: that there is massive corruption within the leadership of the ANC, there is too much factionalism within the ANC, and it is not doing enough for poverty elevation. What then should the ANC do looking to the future, particularly if the party of Mandela should prove incapable of governing South Africa? The problem that one faces in trying to answer this question is that much of the political debate in South Africa, although too much attention has been focused on the division between former President Jacob Zuma and the current President Cyril Ramaphosa and corruption, yes, there should be fight against corruption. But this has made it less likely for the party to look on three other variables which may be affecting its support in South Africa. I refer to the issue of land. Since the apartheid government turned over rule to the ANC in 1994, the hope of land reform has dwindled and nothing meaningful has been done. On the issue raised often by the younger people of South Africa, like Julius Malema, question of nationalization of the main industries, that is an issue which is not often discussed seriously. And of course, the economic program of the ANC. These are the issues which cause a major ripple in the ANC when Julius Malema, then the youth leader of the ANC, insisted that the party tackle the issue of land and nationalization. So while it is true that the last election focused also on poor service delivery and the issue of factionalism in the ANC, the ANC will have to deal with these three issues to be able to attract the support of the younger people of South Africa. There's no way around it. But these are issues which are not popular among the conservative corporate class. They don't want the ANC to go deeply into the land issue. They don't want the ANC to deal with the issue of nationalization or to deal with our corporate class. And so long as this is the problem, the ANC will continue to encounter difficulties. It is not a matter of new leadership. When the Youth League of the ANC helped to elect former President Zuma, they thought he would do it. But the constraints of touching these issues and the risk for the financial well-being of South Africa made it difficult for him to act further. So this is an issue which has to be debated seriously, and only when it comes to a consensus could the ANC hope to be able to win the support it has lost among the people of South Africa. Thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday here on Headline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect with music from the continent. I wanna give you what you came for. The loving that you need, I got it right there. Yes, I'm gonna give you what you came for. The loving that you need, I got it. I got it. When me should be, you feel should be back. That CM liquor something, you feel do me that. Yes. When me should be, you feel should be back. You coulda lucky, don't tie it in your pulley lock. Me coulda lock it long time, but you're always on the road. Your love is all I need, like never before. You know you got the key, so come and unlock me. What you came for, the loving that you need, I got it right there. Yes, I'm gonna give you what you came for, the loving that you need, I got it. You got it all, so don't get away, let it flow while we intimate. Steady bass, your heart beat faster while we embrace. Screaming for more while you anticipate with my fingers below your waist. I wanna give you what you came for. The loving that you need, I got it right there. Yes, I'm gonna give you what you came for. The loving that you need, I got it. New day, cause what we have done can't replace. Yes, we are in another space. No, me no care what they say. Hey. I wanna give you what you came for. The loving that you need, I got it right there. Yes, I wanna give you what you came for. The loving that you need, I got it. I wanna give you what you came for. The loving that you need, I got it right there. Yes, I wanna give you what you came for.
For the ladies right now, the Peace to the ladies. Picha la kutisha, money full back. Hilipati shisha, hauti mkuu fek. Watoto new age, A to Z. Kidume first class, pebeni first late. Mtamwa best bite, nice kama kudedi. Mtoto yuko ready, nje na kwenye bedi. Ona amenipa punje na taka pleti. Na miniko resi machi ya mekula shedi. Kirusha my best, ni slim au shedi. Ujuzi na weledi, mpuza welewi. Makuza welewi, mkusi no gewi. Speedy highway, moja moja one way. Nyama, nyama, lasma iliwe. Kitanda kilali chenyewe, kilaliwe. Chaguliwe nguo na badai zivoliwe. Skaguliwe zitumiwa, lafu skafuliwe. Raza Mombasa, ulinzi mambo sasa. Mapishi ya kisasa, mbishi ni menasa. Miss leo na kukis, na kupapasa. Ra uje tabata, wene bas na vojasa. Bata, bar stam haswa. Ukikamatwa, Boko Haramu haswa. Aya sasa, jirani na kuasa. Ukiharibu ndani ni vitasa. Mwembe fali pupa, Kongo Kinshasa. Uno bila mfupa, resi Ufaransa. Mr. Kanda Bongo man, Mr. Kwasa Kwasa. I'm sorry honey, nipe kimoje cha faster faster.
Toshaka, we kaka, unaraka.
Nipe badai, sindio. Moyo unakwenda mbio, muda unakwenda mbio. Kitingisha kalio, ezidisha salio. Nizungushe kama unazungusha mitandio. Nivuruge unachosema, minisema ndio. Kivuruge wakisema nzibe masikio. Move your body like a snake, ma. Ilete juu kama inavyopigwa Jack, ma. Moshi juu inaitwa party like a gangster. Party la fiesta, party la kukesha. Ini atari kama party la madensa. Dani wakali kama party la kiwesa. Mr. DJ Weka, tunataka zile zinazochezeka. Usiku huu mpaka kinaeleweka.
Kibao, kibao, kibao kata. Kibao, kibao, kibao kata. Kibao, ichi kibao cha kukata. Ukiweka uso tu baole na kunasa. Kibao, kibao, kibao kata. Kibao, kibao, kibao kata. Kibao, ichi kibao cha kukata. Ukiweka uso tu baole na kunasa.
Yeah, kibao kata flani bebe zimejadia. Kajipange cheki mfuko livo kaka. Kama umefua utasugua gama gaga. Ukiwa poa tavua masamaki mapapa. Baby girl, who you finna get never? Don't you even try to be acting all clever. When you see me, I be sweet like pepper. Wait, ain't nothing them hotter. Man them, me a man them killer. Inna the rap game, me a rap game pillar. Ain't no other girl who a keep it realer. That's why me a say me the real than that I hear. I'm in the room, I'm still in the show. I'm better than you, you already know. A friend or a foe, I ain't none of those. But the way my flow sick, you won't wanna those.
Keep out, keep out, keep out, kata. Keep out, keep out, keep out, kata. Keep out, ichi keep out, chaku kata. Ukiweka uso tu baole na kunasa. Keep out, keep out, keep out, kata. Keep out, keep out, keep out, kata. Keep out, ichi keep out, chaku kata. Ukiweka uso tu baole na kunasa.
Our Sunday music spot on Nightline Africa from the English service of the Voice of America. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us tonight. Hope you enjoyed the program. And as you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Join us again on Saturday. Have a very good evening.